Here on RN, this is A Country Breakfast. Let's head out with our rural reporters. This week, city kids from the northern beaches of Sydney get a taste of country life in Cowra. We're off to a dairy farm with a difference on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. This one milks camels. And you meet self-proclaimed weather nerd, Jono Ingram, the new official rainfall recorder for the tiny town of Donald.
Last week, I recorded 0.2 of a mil on Thursday morning and 0.4 of a mil. I think that was Saturday morning or something like that. So
you must have been excited to get that out there.
Like, well, hey! That 0.2 of a mil, that was the first official reading from the new location of the Donald Bureau of Meteorology rain data.
And apparently Jono's also set up an online weather page for Donald. We'll hear his story a bit later. But first up, some very excited city kids getting a taste of life in the country.
My name is Dylan and I'm from Colorado Plateau Public School.
Dylan, tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the Central West.
In our classroom, we have a TV where we can hook up to other classrooms throughout the world through video conference. And we did a video conference with Homewood and we arranged to come over here and we'd stay at someone else's house and we'd just learn about the country and then they'll come back to Sydney and then they'll see what city life is like while we look at what country life is like for them.
A friendship that developed through virtual classrooms has led to an interesting school exchange program taking place between bush and city kids. Children from the small Holmwood Public School in the central west of New South Wales and the Collaroy Plateau Primary School on Sydney's northern beaches are swapping lives. Hello, I'm Kaya Handley. It's been dubbed the Beach to Bush Exchange. For 2.5 days, the city kids have come west of the Blue Mountains to the farming centre of Cowra to experience life in the country before swapping things around and showing their new rural mates what life is like in the Big Smoke. I've caught up with them during their visit to Watervale Farm. So you've been in the bush now for a couple of days. How are you coping with these flies out here as you're swatting them all from your face?
Not really.
A bit different from the city?
Very, very different.
My name's Hamish Newell and I'm from Homewood Public School.
Hamish, what has been your favourite part about showing these city kids around this beautiful part of the region?
Well, because that they've never seen tractors and headers and trucks before. And we went out to my dad's farm and showed them all that sort of stuff. And they were amazed at it and they got to go in it and all that sort of stuff.
What sort of things were they saying when they saw that big farm equipment?
Oh, they were saying that's awesome and I don't get to do this stuff at all and yeah.
What do you think you're most going to miss about country life when you're in the city for a few days?
Probably just the open spaces. Because I don't really like the city because there's too many people and it's all cramped and stuff.
My name's Natasha G and I'm a teacher at Colorado Plateau Public School.
You're finally here. How's it feel to be in Cowra?
Absolutely amazing. You know, you have these crazy out there ideas when you're a teacher. You get inspired by something and you think, you know, maybe that could turn into something really wonderful. And then it turns into something so huge and you think, oh, how do I have the energy and the motivation and the drive to be able to follow this through? But, you know, that's when you rely on wonderful people like your principals, Jenny and Suzanne and the community and your parents and all saying, come on, it's a great thing, it's a great thing. And my partner and my family just shaking their heads at me, Tash, why do you do this to yourself? But now as I look around and see all the kids digging up cow bones, I think to myself, yep, this is why we do these ridiculous things.
So your kids arrived yesterday. What was on the agenda first up?
So we wanted to go into Homewood and double their population immediately. It was so beautiful. We're driving along the freeway. Well, it's not a freeway, it's a highway. Doing 100, then all of a sudden the bus slows down and there's this school just in the middle of nowhere and all these little red shirts waving at the fence and running from the playground. They're here. And we just felt like rock stars and it was just such an overwhelming experience and it was lovely. The kids automatically just gelled and, months and months of little bits of interactions here and there, just amalgamating in that amazing interaction.
We're going to hear from some of the kids who'll tell you a bit about their favourite activities, but the things that I've heard that your students were surprised about, the open space.
Yes.
The fact that we have internet out here and the animals that they've seen on some farms as well, just with the kids that they're living with.
Yeah, well, I guess some of these kids only see these animals if they go to, you know, a farm. We have a kindy farm visit at Colleroy Plateau, so these kids are in year five, so that may have been 6 years ago, and, you know, or on TV, on documentaries. So to be able to, you know, go up to a sheep and pull the wool apart and have a look at it. You know, these kids just don't get, and to smell the wool, it was amazing. You can't learn that from books or internet. So, yeah, they were pretty stoked to be able to do all those different things and the experiences that they've gained.
So as part one, trip to the bush, the bush part of bush to the beach, been a success?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
And part two is about to take place. The kids are about to swap, go up to Colleroy. How excited are you to show these kids and Jenny around your hood?
I know. They've packed the pressure on, actually, because it's been so successful here and I've sort of laid back and been the tourist and forgotten what's going on. And now I'm sort of thinking, oh, no, now it's my turn to put on the big show. And, you know, the country has so much to offer city kids and to learn so much. And I know we're here at Watervale Farm and Stephen and Alison and even little Caitlin have taught me so much. And I'm just drinking in all this information, trying really hard to fit it all in, and then I'm thinking, okay, we'll come to the city, what could I possibly teach you? I know that it'll just come out when we're there, and I guess that's what we've learnt from this situation, is that we all have this amazing knowledge about where we come from and how we live, and we think that it's normal and we think that it's natural, but when you meet someone who's from a totally different background and you start talking to them and you realise how much knowledge you have and how much you should impart on each other and give each other that little taste of your lifestyle and, you know, make the world closer.
Hi, my name is Lily Lawler and I come from Homewood Public School.
Lily, tell us a bit about what you've enjoyed about this experience.
Well, probably mostly showing my billets around and, like, I've got a horse and they're scared of, like, my dog and all that. Yeah.
Has that been strange for you to meet kids your age who don't quite know what your life is like?
Yes, very strange. Like, they don't want to go near them. They're just freaking out a bit about them.
What else have you been showing them to do while they've been in the Central West?
Well, I've been showing them that we have, like, I live on a farm. We have a huge property, telling them if you see a snake, what to do, and all that stuff, yeah.
For you, it's going to be pretty different being in a city, living in the farm. Are you a bit nervous about that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous, yeah.
What are you looking forward to, though?
Probably going surfing.
Yeah.
With two home and away stars, which, yeah.
Hi, I'm Jess Mueller. I'm from Colleroy Plateau Public School.
For you, what have you enjoyed about being out here in the Central West?
Oh, seeing how different the environment is and how little towns can be and properties a lot bigger than mine.
So far, what's your favourite part been?
I've liked every bit of it, actually. I don't think I can choose.
The Cowra students are about to go back to Colleroy. What are you looking forward to about showing them about what your life is like back in the city?
Mostly the beach, because they're probably going to be quite surprised to see that, because you don't see anything like that out here. And just no farm animals or big areas to run around in.
Hello, Alison Rutledge.
Alison, you are the host of this very special day that we're having with the Colleroy and Holmwood kids. Tell us what they've been doing on your farm this morning.
Okay, we've just been introducing them to everything farm, really. They've looked at sheep, touched them, felt the wool, got down to earth with sheep, really, and took them into the shearing shed. We've shorn sheep, we've shown them wool, we've talked about the costs associated with it all. We've just really opened them up to the bush.
How surprised have some of these city kids been at what you've shown them?
I think we've opened their eyes, Kaya, particularly to the work involved in doing it and to the feel, you know, just getting down and dirty, I suppose, the feel of the wool in the race, the reaction of animals and to be honest, I haven't had a lot of time yet to talk to the kids to know exactly what's gone through their minds, but I'm sure we'll get the feedback.
I can tell you they've been pretty excited.
Oh, yeah, no, they're busting their seams.
And you might be able to hear the excitement behind us. At the moment, we've got about 5 teams of 10. Tell us what they're doing, Alison.
We've improvised well, it's like a dinosaur dig, I suppose, but we're doing a cattle dig. And through the acquisition of several bones, we're trying to reconstruct a dinosaur cow, which is interesting to watch these kids at work. Some of them are tackling it really different. There's a lot of improvisation for bones that are missing. There's sticks and rocks and ribs and goodness knows what's, but they're having fun.
And I believe that these city kids will take home a bit of cow or a bit of the farm with them as well.
Oh, yes, we have a treasure chest to leave them with. We always like to leave them with something. It's nice to take something home, something that you can touch base with later on after the excitement is laid down. Each of the children will be given a small box with tokens of the farm. They'll have a sample of grains. They've got raw wool, they've got greasy wool, they've got ear tags. We'll leave them with a mark and something to take back to the big smoke and show everyone else down there.
What have you been impressed about with these two schools coming together?
Oh, Kai, this is what we love about farming, is teaching these children about what we do and what we love doing, what we do every day. And I guess we're sort of banking on our future. If we can send these children back with a little bit of a view and a glimpse of to what we do every day, these children in, say, 6, 7, 8 years' time will be the future voters of Australia. They will be making decisions that impact us. And for all we know, some of these fit children here today, be they Homewood or Collaroy kids, may be the leaders of Australia. And if they can understand where the roots of the bush and what happens here, you know, maybe we will better everything for everybody.
Alison Rutledge from Watervale Farm, ending that beach to bush exchange story from Kaya Handley at Cowra in the central west of New South Wales. Hope those Homewood kids had a great time in Sydney and got to meet maybe those home and away stars. Still to come on Rural Reporter today, weather readings from the tiny town of Donald, and it's milking time on the Sunshine Coast.
It's all right, we won't hurt you. Come on, bring the babies out and we'll let you out. You coming? Come on, babies. Theodora, we're not hurting them.
It's a busy morning here at the dairy near Caloundra on Queensland's Sunshine Coast, but it's not just any old dairy. That sound you can hear behind me, that's actually a camel. That's right, this is a camel milk dairy. No cows to be seen here. G'day, I'm Marty McCarthy, and it's not often you see these magnificent animals being milked. And just wait until you hear how much a litre of this stuff is fetching. Camel farmer Lauren Brisbane is here to show me around her unique dairy.
Well, we're milking camels, so what we do is they come into the race and then we wash them really thoroughly and make sure their udders lovely and clean, and then we make sure that they've let down, so we get a little bit of milk out of them to make sure that their udders are nice and healthy, and then we put the cups on them.
Take me back a step, because as you say, milking camels, that's not really an idea that a lot of consumers or lovers of milk would be used to.
No, it's something quite different in Australia. Of course, it's been consumed for thousands of years, but it is quite new in Australia. Camel milk is a really high in health product. So it's used for children with autism. It's the only dairy that's recommended for children with autism. And it's also used for diabetics and people with gastrointestinal problems, you know, gut dysfunction. So very high in health product.
You're one of the few camel milk dairies in the country. Has there been an interest in what you're doing here?
There's been a lot of interest, we get a lot of emails from people who say, you know, we heard about what you're doing, we'd really like to do it too, so can we come and have a look at your dairy? And we get those sort of requests all the time.
Lauren sells out of milk every week, and it fetches as much as $32 a litre.
The reason why it's so high is because it's so expensive to actually produce. Our production costs are enormous. It's not like a cattle dairy, where you've got hundreds of cows and you don't have to look after the babies. Our babies stay on their mothers, so the production costs for a start are double, and we have very specialised feed as well. So the costs in producing the milk here are extremely high.
It's an animal that's largely seen as a pest here in Australia. Camels were first introduced in the 1840s to help explorers traverse inland Australia. But as they became wild, the population exploded. And after culls in recent years, the number now hovers around the 300,000 head mark. But despite their pest status here, Lauren says they are worthy of livestock status too.
Camels have been milked for thousands of years in the Middle East and North Africa, but Australia was very new. They're a different animal. So the challenges were, you know, how do we do with this with such a large animal and an animal that's largely been allowed to be wild or only managed behind wire.
And what about the logistics of actually milking the camels? I notice when you bring the mums through, you have to have the babies in a separate channel on the side, and the babies are there still drinking some milk while you're trying to get milk to collect on the other side. So are the babies drinking your profits?
Well, we share the milk with the babies. The camel cows are here primarily because they're mothers, so their priority in life is their babies, so their babies have to be our priority as well. So it's really important that we make sure that the babies are growing really well and really healthy. So that's why camel cows only produce sort of 4 or 5 litres at the very most a day.
And a big question, I suppose, is what's the taste like? How does it compare to normal cow's milk?
It tastes like milk. It's just a little bit saltier, but it just tastes like milk.
Now, a fixture of any dairy is baby animals, because in the first instance, the mum needs them to start producing milk. And this farm is no different. We head into the paddock to meet the camel calves. They're probably the smallest camels I've ever seen.
These are quite small camels. We've got a variety of camels here. We've got some smaller camels and we've got some really, really big camels. So, that's Australia for you. There's a wide variety of camels, you know, this size as well. So, you know, it just depends on genetics.
I was actually referring to the baby camels.
Oh. That's very funny. They are very tiny. They are very new. So, yeah, these are our baby babies. So, and you can see the girls are coming up to have a little sniff and find out who you are.
They're very inquisitive. What are the babies like, having them here on the farm? Because they're new, aren't they?
They're very new. We bred these babies. These were all bred here. And you're getting a kiss and a cuddle here. No, we bred all these babies. So they've... having a new baby or having an imminent birth is really, really special and important. And, you know, we wait for those babies to be born and we make sure that the mothers are as healthy as they can be and, you know, take a lot of care with them, particularly, you know, before and after they've had their babies.
Lauren, you've got some milking to do, so I'll let you head up to the dairy. I'm going to head out to another paddock now to meet one of the camel tamers here on the farm.
Cozzy, come on. Come on, love, walk up. We'll give you a feed. Come on, walk up.
That's Emerson Tasker, and these camels are his mates.
So one of them's Bam Bam, one's Maxie, the most placid camels here, I guess, in the most sense, as you can see. They're basically brothers in a sense. They pretty much do everything together. We can't see one without the other.
I'm surprised with how friendly they are. They're coming up for a nibble and a pat.
Yeah, put it this way, if they could fit in your car and take them home, they would. It's like, yeah, Maxie will sit on your lap if you can and lay down and have a cuddle. Good old tummy rub.
And explain to me that concept of how they respect you, because you were saying you're dominant over one of them.
Yeah, so if I'm dominant over one of them, it means he's like I can touch his ear, he's not going to whip around and try and bite me, or he's going to put his head down. So it's just a matter of, like, they're comfortable around you to the point where they trust you. So, like, Maxie, far out, mate. if they drop their head to your feet or something, it means it's a sign of respect. They totally and utterly trust you. I guess it's the same thing with your pets in that household, I guess. Like, if you feed them enough, they'll respect you. But, like, and also if they do something naughty and you punch them, they know that you're in charge.
How long, I mean, these guys look pretty large at the moment, but how long until they reach full size?
They're basically, both of them are about a year old. And trying to get coming for a kiss there. They're basically about a year old, so I'd give it another 3 or 4 years and then they'll be fully grown.
And these guys, well, they're males, so they clearly won't be used for milking, they'll be for breeding?
Yeah, definitely. So Maxie's going to be our little pet camel. He's going to see how placid it is. He'll let you, whatever. He'll get in the car with you. And Bam Bam, we're looking to make our breeding bull eventually, hopefully.
So that is a wind reading and an automatic rain gauge. And that's the official rain gauge in the ground.
That looks like your dog could knock it over.
I know, yeah, he couldn't. But he could pee in it. And he pees on everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if I've got rain in it, which is not rain. No, I don't.
If it wasn't for unpaid volunteers like Jono Ingram and his predecessor Harold Flett, there would be no official weather records for the tiny town of Donald here in Victoria's Western Wheatbelt. But these all-important daily observations don't just get logged and forgotten. They're posted daily on the town's very own weather station Facebook page, complete with photographs and even the odd video. At last count, Jono had more than 1,000 followers.
Last week, I recorded 0.2 of a mil on Thursday morning and 0.4 of a mil. I think that was Saturday morning or something like that. So
you must have been excited to get that out there. Like,
well,
hey!
That 0.2 of a mil, that was the first official reading from the new location of the Donald Bureau of Meteorology rain gauge. Comes off like that.
Hello, I'm Danny Grindley. Jono has just been given the title as the Bureau of Meteorology's official rainfall observer and recorder in Donald, but he's been jotting down weather data for most of his life.
I've termed myself a weather nerd. My dad, he was an agronomist, and so we used to always log rainfall, but I don't know, I was probably about 12 or 13 when I started doing that. I would log the rainfall.
So this is back in Dubbo where you grew up?
Yep, back in Dubbo, which had a lot higher rainfall than what we do here.
A bit more exciting.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's 24-inch country or something rather up there, and I think we're about 14 or something down here. I was just obsessed by it and looking at records and what the records were. I could spend hours as a teenager trawling through the Bureau of Meteorology weather, the records, the climate data, and I still do it. I do it for places in the States or go to the UK or something rather and just look at weather data just because it's interesting.
Yes, it sounds.
Yeah, it's super interesting, it is.
Well, if you're defining nerds as people that are interested in the weather, you are in nerd capital of the world here.
That's
you
right.
You found a lot of interest. Is that why you started to share that more broadly on social media?
People just appreciate local information. I don't know if people even realise that we get all our temperature, official temperatures on the news. You know, it will say Donald on the map. It's not Donald. It comes from Charlton. So I started the Donald Weather Station page. Started to get people not only from Donald, but around the region, around Horsham, up at Jeparit. I think there's someone at Rainbow that comments on things from time to time. And then duck shooters in Melbourne. They want to know when Lake Bloke fills.
Yeah. And so how many are you at now?
I think it's about 1150 now.
Do you know the population of Donald?
There's 1700 in Donald. So a vast majority would be from Donald or at least the surrounding regions.
And do you get much interaction from others telling you you're wrong, which is what Bureau staff cop a lot?
Yeah, they do. They don't direct it at me, which is good. I'm pretty clear I'm not the Bureau of Meteorology.
Hold up. You are now.
I am. I'm not the Bureau of Meteorology as a forecaster, which is often where people get frustrated, and rightly so. You know, you look at the map and you see that Victoria's covered with radar coverage except for the Wheatbelt. You know, the Wimmera and the Southern Mallee just doesn't have radar coverage, which is a bit odd.
You seem like a fairly happy-go-lucky kind of bloke. It must have been fairly depressing just reporting a complete lack of rain for such a long period.
Yeah. I mean, the odd thing about me, I'm interested in extremes. So we had August last year. I was actually bitterly disappointed that I actually had to log rainfall for August. Rain fell on the last day of July, which gets logged on the 1st of August. And so I was actually really disappointed by that, even though actually a lot of rain would have been great. I think the real outlier in this year is when you take this year with the last 2 or 3 years. Officially, Donald's had 240 mils this year, but the Donald Weather Station hasn't quite got 180 mils.
That's so an incredible difference.
Yeah, we have a vast difference. So when I look, if I took the Donald Weather Station record there and add that to some of the previous years, it's taken us about 22 months to get an average rainfall year. So subsoil moisture levels are just super low, which is not good news for cropping.
And let's hope Jono Ingram gets to measure lots of rain in that gauge in his backyard at Donald. Danny Grindley brought us that story from Western Victoria. You're listening to A Country Breakfast. I'm Edwina Farley. Since world leaders took to the stage in Paris on Monday to talk the talk on climate change, negotiators from 195 nations have been attempting to walk the walk. Here in Australia, farmers are arguably on the front line of climate change. We'll see how they're adapting next.